All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Cameron F. from CA World Services Archive Committee. I'm here with Veronica W. on this Wednesday afternoon, April 17th, 2024. Veronica, do I have your permission to record this interview for the posterity of Cocaine Anonymous?
Yes, you do, Cameron.
All right. Thank you so much, Veronica. I'm really pleased to have you here with us. And we're really interested in your story and experience of CA in those early days. So let's just start with the first question. When did you come into Cocaine Anonymous? And, you know, the more specific you can be, like the date, the year, what groups and so forth, that would be really exciting.
Well, first of all, my name is Veronica and I'm an addict and an alcoholic. And I came into Cocaine Anonymous in December of 1988, but unfortunately, I was not convinced that I was an addict, even though I went to meetings every day and I was kind of standoffish and things like that. So I went to treatment twice in less than a year, and I was working in a chemical plant. I was very fortunate that they put me through twice, and but my sobriety date now is October the 1st of 1989. So 2 months short of when I first started, I ended up back in the program, thoroughly convinced and ready to go to work. And I had a friend of mine, Hal Kay, that I interviewed recently, talked about a guy named Dr. Barron that owned the name at the time of Cocaine Anonymous. And the first treatment center I went in was Dr. Barron's treatment center. So I know him personally. And years later, when I became a licensed chemical dependency counselor here in Texas, it was Dr. Barron that let me do my what they call it. It's not a internship. It's the one you do before that you have to do free. So he let me do that there. And they really, I actually got to work with a counselor that I met my first time around. And he helped me to get all that together so I could pass my test. But basically, when I came in, Cocaine Anonymous was fairly new in Houston, as you have already stated in the wonderful history, historical things that you have sent me about our inception, about H. Lee Slavin, about how he was our first trustee, and about how we got inducted into the CA Hall of Fame in 1986 is what I call it. So I came in 3 years later, and they called me the second round of workers in the Cocaine Anonymous experience for the state of Texas. We had very few meetings. We had a meeting of Bonnie Bray, which has a t-shirt. I think I just acquired one of those that got a last house on the block, was their little emblem. And it was an old raggedy looking house, but it was, that's what we were saying. Our last house on the block was Cocaine Anonymous. And then we had another group sprang out of that one because we used to meet in hospitals. We all started out as hospital and institution groups that didn't have a building or anywhere of our own to meet. And we grew from there. So we were in a hospital called HIH, which is Houston International Hospital. And a guy named John Lucas that used to play for the Houston Rocket basketball and also became San Antonio Spur coach years later. He was running that treatment center up there because, you know, he knew us personally. So he helped us out, helped them out with that. And so when I came in, it was called Free at Last. And then, but Free at Last was the first club in Cocaine Anonymous here in Texas. The group is called Keep Hope Alive. And that was my original home group, was Keep Hope Alive, because one of my other counselors that was in recovery at that first treatment center, he would let me go out to meetings at night. And back then they would tell you, when you get to so-and-so meeting, you ask for such and such, and that person will take you under their wing and show you what the program is all about. So the first thing I ever read, they brought a meeting into the treatment center, and I ended up reading The Promises. And my favorite promises is, I will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. That's my favorite one ever. It sunk all the way into my heart the first time I read it. And so that's been rolling with me for quite, you know, all of my sobriety when I get to situations that baffle me. But the first thing I did was at 90 days, my new sponsor, Bobby, she's gone on to the big meeting in the sky, as we call it. Bobby let me do my first meeting in 90 days, and I was scared to death because I was like, oh, what do I do? You know, even though I knew everybody. And she said, you just sit here at the desk. I'm going to chair. You're going to lead. So all you have to do is point. And I remember the faces that were in that room that night when I did that first, my first meeting that I did in front of the group of people that had loved me so much, even the first time around. But I refused to feel the love, and I came back and they embraced me with open arms. And that was at a place where we used to call, it was on a street called Lanewood. But and we used to call it, are you going to Lanewood? But that's not the name of the group. The name of, we have a club also, and it's the Shady Dale Club. And then we have the Alcoholics Anonymous group there, and we also have the Cocaine Anonymous group there. So that's my home group for the last past few, well, about a little bit over 20 some years. But I started out doing the meeting. There, we had a small schedule. We had just started. All our meetings were on the southwest side of town because that's where they started. And so we started branching out. We went to a place, community center called the Hester House, and they allowed us to have a meeting there. What was special about that meeting, Cameron, was that they let us have it in the nursery. So we always talk about the ABC carpet that was on the floor and the little kitty chairs that we sat in when we had our meetings there. And a dear friend of mine, we're like 7 months apart. He's in September and I'm the 1st of October. Ben was the one that made the coffee. And he's still around the fellowship. He and I and another young lady that we met in the fellowship. So I would go there on Friday nights. There was somewhere to go every night. Back then, I think Riverside Hospital, which was a historical Black hospital here in Houston, let us have meetings there. And we would go there and have big book studies. And on Thursday nights, everybody would meet. And what really impressed me about the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous, that it didn't matter which meetings I went to, I would always see the same people. And so then we had the Bonnie Bray. That was what H. Lee Slavin and those guys started. And he was a big superstar for us here in Houston. And we still love him and miss him very much because he's the one that we attributed going to California and getting a starter kit for Cocaine Anonymous way back then, even before I got here. And there's a rumor going around that one of our guys here also wrote, who is a cocaine addict? So, you know, not sure where that is true or not, but the guy that was doing gypsum literature, I mean, everybody was really into what they were doing. And it was so much enthusiasm, you know, the enthusiasm of the program. Just, you know, I always wanted to go. I didn't necessarily want to be around them because I didn't really know them, but I wanted to go and see what they were doing. So I would show up for everything. And they would give dances when Free At Last finally got a building because they came up with a fundraiser. And I have one of those t-shirts too. It's the Free At Last Keep Hope Alive group, and it's got a monkey on the on your back, and that's what we would talk about, that t-shirt, and everybody bought them. They had the monkey on the back. So I fell in love with Free At Last, and they finally got a building. The first building was on Alameda, and everybody would come there on Saturday nights to dance. And a friend of mine, she told me that Free At Last or Keep Hope Alive group needed an assistant secretary because she said, well, there's only three of us, the secretary, the treasurer, and what they call a GSR, which is, you know, group service representative, I learned later. So she said, oh, how that, you know, I'm thinking, how hard is being secretary? Because I had been my mom's secretary in church from 12 years old, so I knew how to keep minutes and all this kind of stuff. So I went to be the secretary, and it was a really unique experience because my mom fell. It was on Mother's Day when the meeting was, and I was so in love with the meeting that it didn't matter to me whether it was on Mother's Day or not. I was going to show up because these guys were helping me stay alive. So I went to the meeting. I had some people stay with my mom, but my dad was out of town, and went to the meeting, and they appointed me as a, you know, her assistant. And 2 weeks later, she quit. So I became the secretary. And then after that, a friend and I went to another meeting at H Harris County Psychiatric Hospital, a CA meeting we had started there. We noticed that there weren't any chips, you know, and we would go every week and see, well, wonder why there's no chips. Well, we came to find out that the guy that was doing the meeting was actually using again, and he was taking the money out of the basket and going by chips. He wouldn't buy chips. I'm sorry. He was taking the money. So that's why they didn't have chips. So we talked with him because he was a friend of ours and he agreed to let us take that over. So now I'm doing my first meeting on my own and now I'm becoming a GSR. And that was somewhere around 1991, I believe, that I became a GSR because my mom died in 1991 and I was a GSR at the time that she passed away, 19 months sober. And, my mom passes away, and I had to, the night that we buried my mom, I'll never forget it. I was supposed to be working the dance, and we pay $5 to get in if you're a couple and $3 if you're single. So I thought it was a raise because I was working the coffee bar and coffee was only 25 cents and the soda was only 50 cents. So I'm thinking, I got a raise. I got to go and take up this money. And I told my dad, I said, I got to go to the dance. And he pulled me over to the side. He said, well, you know, your aunt and your cousins are here. So, you know, don't say stuff like that around them because they won't understand. He said, I know you got to go. He said, I said, yeah, if you want to keep your TV in your house, you probably want me to go ahead and go work my job. And so I went there and it was so cool because I had just buried my mom that day. And I got so many hugs of people coming through the door, just paying their money to the dance, to come into the dance and have fun. And back then my kids would go with me. And I had one, the son that's no longer with me. He used to dance with a guy that was real young in recovery that's still around, Alvin. And they would do an MC Hammer show and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember we go bowling together. We go out to eat together. We did everything together. The dances would end at 1 o'clock. So we could all be off the streets by two when the bars ended and drunk people be driving around. So we just go sit in IHOP and wait on the drunk people to come through and just sit there and say, ooh, that could be us, you know. So I started out with a really close-knit group. I became a GSR about a year and a half into my sobriety after being a secretary for a while. And I had my own meeting to take care of. And that gave me hope. Back then, we were given, I think when I came to Cocaine Anonymous in 89, we were on something like our third convention. And I went because we had two conventions back to back. One was Carry the Message, Not the Mess. And then the next one was Carry the Message, Not the Mess, Part Two. I'll never forget that. So I'm looking out for t-shirts for that if someone will part with one. But even back then, before my time, this guy named Mike, he had donated to us a orange newcomer chip. And I had seen those, but I also saw the orange, I think it was 25th anniversary chips that we had years ago. But he's actually donated his newcomer chip to us. And it was so cool because he said, Veronica, I really don't want to part with this, but because I know it's you taking care of it, then I'm going to give it to you. And so I'm honored to have that old newcomer chip, because a lot of people nowadays don't know that our first newcomer chip was orange. And so what happened for me was I got so involved in Cocaine Anonymous and my kids were excited about it. I was still working my job out at the chemical plant. Cocaine Anonymous saved my life. I still had a job. I never lost my job. I was out there 13 years before I had to quit that type of work because it was hard on my body physically. But in that 13 years, I really learned how to be a go-getter for the Fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous. We got to the point where we had five delegates. And I remember in 1998, I think it was, I became a delegate for the first time. And I got to go to the World Service Conference and meet all the people from all over the world. And some of the people now are deceased that I met. Like, you know, you and I talked about David L. And I met him. We were new delegates together back during that time. And we were just sitting there like little kiddies in kindergarten, you know, what do we do? What do we do? In the little meeting that they had to show us the ropes. But back then I was big H and I was able to get H and I into the prisons. They had been wanting us. And we went in and started about 18 meetings. And I have I think I talked about it in that newsletter article that I wrote that I found that you so graciously had all those newsletter articles there, the CA newsletter. And I think mine is somewhere around 19, the first quarter or something of 1999, when I wrote about my H and I experience and how blessed I felt to be able to go in and carry the message inside the prison. So I've always loved history. I was a history buff in school. I loved traveling and seeing, different cultures and stuff. And so I wanted to learn how to do archives, and we didn't have one back then. CA hadn't had one yet. So I started working with the AA people here that did it, and they actually trained me on how to do archives the way that they did it. And I actually got to introduce the not the archive lady. She had the AA archive lady had stuff going on the year that I was able to go down to Beaumont to their conference and introduce the guy that came from New York that worked with the archives that was right underneath her. So that was like a real great milestone in my recovery too, to be able to just be there and talk to someone about the history and how they keep it and how important it is, how necessary it is. But on my journey through CA here, we just grew and blossomed. So many groups have come out of those original two or three groups that I mentioned. The Keep Hope Alive group is still around. The Bonnie Bray group is still around. They're in the Right Step Treatment Center, and so they are part of the originals. They came through those meetings and other meetings. Our North Wayside Coming Home group is our CA meeting at North Wayside, which was my second home group, and it was so cool because we bought some property not too long ago, and we got a house on it. We got everything paid for. We can't open up yet though because the city's requiring driveway, so we're still trying to work all that out so we'll have places for people to park when we do crank back up. But I feel so fortunate to have gotten in on what I call the ground floor of Cocaine Anonymous, being able to share the message with the addict that's still suffering, being able to go down to other cities, Galveston, Texas City, Freeport, be able to go down and help them start their meetings when they started coming to the area, being able to even help South Central get started when they came in and they wanted to observe what we were doing because Cocaine Anonymous had faded away in Austin, and they came into our area meetings back then around 2001, 2000, something like that, and they started seeing what we were doing, and they wanted their own area, and I'm so proud of them. Now I just got something from Liz T on the upcoming beach party they're having that they have every year, but the camaraderie still exists between us and whoever else in the state, because back then we were the whole state, and that was an awesome task. But my journey through Cocaine Anonymous has included a lot of service work. I've been a secretary of the area. I've been area chair, delegate, but my delegate again, working with archives. So I'm really, really excited about that. But anyway, so we were able to expand quite fast in Cocaine Anonymous because people had never heard of it. The hospitals opened their arms to us. We had a lot of hospital meetings here. And the AA people that do the prisons, they invited me to their meeting and they took me in, and I became a volunteer in the state of Texas. And they showed me, and the guy that was over the state back then with volunteer services, first thing he said to me, he said, "Where y'all been? We've been looking for y'all." So that felt quite interesting. And to see the people come forth and say, "Yeah, I'll go in and do a prison meeting," and see guys that had formerly served in prisons able to go back and do a meeting at the prison they did time in. I mean, that was just awesome. And then we won some people over. There was one guy, he's deceased now, and he had done what, five? He was a five-time loser, they call it. And the last time he did 12, they call it 12 flat. He did a whole 12 years. And we used to take meetings into, they let us start a CA meeting at the prison where he was. And we would go in once a month, a few of us. And that guy was so impressed with Cocaine Anonymous that when he came home, he got in touch with our fellow that he had met, and he called me on the phone and said, "Guess who's here?" And they were at the Bonnie Bray Club, and he was, "It's me, I'm out." And he went directly to work in Cocaine Anonymous, and he worked right up until the time that he passed away. He's been gone about 12 years ago, but to be able to see Cocaine Anonymous bear fruit like that, even from the penitentiary, we just have an awesome story here of people like everyone, people that have changed their lives, not because they were forced to, but because they wanted to when they came into Cocaine Anonymous and they saw what we had to offer. Some of us had never been loved like that. Some of us had never had care and concern come our way like that. Some of us had never been considered useful members in society until we came into Cocaine Anonymous here in Texas. And to see the growth of such a big state, no matter how it grows, we don't really worry about it. Get your coffee pot and go wherever you need to go to get your little meeting started, and we'll all gang up and come over and give you some support. And that's pretty much what we try to enforce now, especially with the newcomers that weren't back there in the early days. But I just got in on the ground floor. I mean, I was so excited to meet the people that started Cocaine Anonymous here, to see that they trusted me and they loved me. And that I remember when I met Johnny Siegel back in 92, I believe it was, because it was my 91, 91 or 92. He came here and spoke at one of our conventions, and he told his story, and he talked about, his mom dying the next day, and he got sober the next day. And I had just buried, no, that was 91. I had just buried my mom a few months earlier than that. And I got the courage to go up to him, because at the time I think I was working on my second year and he had like 9 years. So I thought he was Bill W. Jr. or something. So I went up to him and I told him with tears in my eyes, I said, "Johnny, I'm so glad because I got to make amends to my mom. And my mom got to see me 19 months sober before she died. And she was very proud of me." And he started crying, and he said, "See, that's how the program works. You got something that I'll never get." And I'll never forget that. And every time he saw me after that, that was another thing. People remember your name and stuff. And I'll be like, "Wow, how they know my name?" And I'm sitting in the meeting saying, "My name's Veronica and I'm an addict," but I wondered how they knew my meeting because the fog was still clearing in my head. How you know my name, But every time I was in Oklahoma at a convention one time, I walked through the door, they were all sitting in a restaurant, and Johnny was there, and he said, "Hey, y'all, look, there's Veronica." And I was like, "Oh my God, he remembered my name." And even today, newcomers say that when you personalize things with them and you say, Hey, so and so, how you doing? How you been? I heard you shared the meeting the other day. Is everything going okay?" And to see Cocaine Anonymous really reached out and did that for me and for others that have come in, that have stayed for many, many years now that we have been around for many years. And I'm just so excited to be a member. I have the same enthusiasm. I love going to meetings. I started a meeting at my church, and then the county came in and tore the streets up and stuff, so we had to put it on ice for a minute. And now we're starting back, and nobody's coming yet, but I don't care. I go every other week. I go 2 weeks out of the month, and last Tuesday, which is today's Wednesday, no, last Monday, we do it first and third Mondays. And I went there, and it was just me. So I had taken my 12 and 12, and I said, "Me and God did a meeting on step 7. Boy, was that a meeting! Oh my goodness, I got so many things revealed about myself just reading that literature and seeing where I am in that." And that's what Cocaine Anonymous does for me. It tells me things like, I work my program because somebody worked their program on me. I reach out to others because they reached out to me. I show love and compassion because that's what they showed me, even when I wasn't willing to accept it. I work the steps because the steps have given me my life. And being on the archives committee, let me say this to you, Cameron. I love you so much. You are such a wonderful mentor. And you have just taken me to a level that I didn't even know I would be going to when it comes down to enthusiasm about working with the archives committee and doing what I can. This weekend, since I am a delegate on the archives chair here in the Texas Area Service Gulf Coast, I'll be going to Albuquerque to our Southwest Regional I've already reached out and told people, hey, we're having it next year, 2025. Houston, Texas is the place to be for Southwest Regional. And I need donations because I'm already planning a big archives room and, things like that for next year, because about history is what I'm about. I'm about history and I'm about knowing where I came from. I never wanted to not know anything about whatever I connected myself to, whether it was on either side of recovery. So I'm not going to do any less than that here where I am now. My early beginnings were just awesome. I look back on them sometime and I say, wow, how did you do all that and work 12 hours and raise kids? But God gave me the energy to do it. And now that I am retired and I can do more work, and the kids are grown and even the grandkids are grown, then I just feel like I'm in a really special place. One thing I did in 2020, December, I think it was the 4th, I went into the hospital. I had COVID, and that was before the vaccine came out, because I was watching TV when the first person got the vaccine over there in the UK. I was in a hospital bed, and I was in CCU for 10 days in a regular room for 3. And I was so sick, and we were starting the meeting at my church back then, and it was so important to me that that meeting gets started, because there's a parole office nearby, and I know eventually we're going to get people that'll be making that their regular spot. But I wanted to be on that meeting, and we were meeting on Zoom back then, And I actually went to the area meeting in my hospital gown, with oxygen tube in my nose, and because I wanted to get that meeting on the schedule. It's very important that we keep our meetings on the schedule so people know where to find us. And it's very important for us to be there when they come looking for us, no matter what. Sitting at a meeting and nobody's coming, that doesn't mean anything to me, because God gives the increase on whatever it is that we do. All we have to do is be faithful, as far as I'm concerned. And Cocaine Anonymous taught me how to be faithful. They taught me how to have some stability in my life. They taught me how to not defocus, keep the main thing, which is staying clean and sober. And there's just a plethora of ways to do that. I could never think of, I'll never get to exercise all the ways there is to stay clean and sober. I'm just going to be using a few of them as long as I'm in existence. But I went to that meeting, and the reception that I got was just like when I first came in. They were like, oh, how you doing? Where you been? We miss you. Oh, you're starting a meeting at your church, things like that. So, it was important to me, because I didn't know if that was going to be the last time I got to be of service in this fellowship. And I pulled through it. I got out, and I went back to the area a little bit after that, because I was still learning how to be retired at the time. But now I've been back at the area for almost 2 years, and I'm archives chair, and I'm working with as a delegate again. So I'm excited. I'm excited that I came in on the ground floor of Cocaine Anonymous here in the Texas area. I'm excited that I've gotten to serve all this time. If it's nothing but show up and notice that, oh, they need coffee, so I'll go over and make the coffee or whatever, just like a elder statesman is supposed to do. And I'm glad to be an elder statesman these days and be able to listen and be able to be there and be able to be available, for people to feel safe to come and talk to me and not run them off because I disagree with them. I like all that kind of stuff. And I was given that so freely by Cocaine Anonymous, and I try to keep giving it back. Any questions?
That was really a wonderful story. Thank you so much, Veronica. It kind of I have a couple of questions. That was
Okay.
really, really well done. You mentioned Dr. Barron. Now, I've seen there was a lot of controversy with CA and Dr. Barron in 1989, and I was wondering if you know any details about that story.
Well, from what I understand, because I wasn't actually in on the getting the name for us, he owned the name Cocaine Anonymous at the time, and he had it for a while, and he was marketing his treatment centers with that. And there was even a halfway house. Matter of fact, the halfway house that I went to in 1989, when I got out of treatment, I had my own home. I worked at a chemical plant. I made money, but I didn't know how to stay sober. Because you know, I always say it, when the attic is the head of the household, that's real scary, you know. So I needed to go to a halfway house, and this guy, he's gone now. His name is Bobby Schreiber. He had a halfway house called CA Aftercare, and he had taken the CA Aftercare off of Dr. Barron's treatment center that was named Cocaine Anonymous. So I remember when all that controversy came about, because I was in treatment when CA Aftercare had to change their name, and they changed it to Houston Aftercare because we had acquired the trademark for Cocaine Anonymous. So I was there when the halfway house did it. I wasn't there when they actually got it, wrestled it away from Dr. Barron. And he was very gracious, you know, about it from what I understand. But I just think it's wonderful because here I was all these years later, 13, 14 years sober. And it was him that's now doing outpatient that allowed me, oh yeah, I remember Veronica. Let her come on in and do her practicum with us. I would love to see her again, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was tense, but most things are. I mean, you know, you have to learn how to move past the tension as far as I'm concerned. But I think it was very gracious of him to finally just say, yeah, okay, do it.
You know, and that's a wonderful side of it I haven't heard of heard from. I've got the legal documents here in the archives. Is Dr. Barron still alive?
I don't know because the guy that I did my practicum with, I heard that he's passed away. And so I'm not sure because that was way back in
That
2003
was
when I did that
30,
practicum.
yeah.
So that was 20 years ago.
Well, you know, that was 30 years ago.
2003.
Oh, no, I meant Dr. Barron and
Well, yeah, it was
the guy
30
was
years ago.
years
Yeah,
ago. But
because
if he was still alive, that would be an interesting interview for you to do if he would be open to
oh, okay, I'll try to find out.
it. I thought you'd be
I will, you know,
enthusiastic.
I will.
How big were now? I just jumped back to the early days when you came in. How big were the meetings back in those days, do you remember?
The meetings were pretty good sized meetings. You know, it wasn't anything to have like 20 people in a meeting because Cocaine Anonymous was like catching on fire. It's like, oh my God, we got a choice, you know. We could go to this one or that one, or here's this new one, you know. And it wasn't anything to have 20, 30 meetings because we started out with enthusiasm. Cocaine Anonymous was always doing something fun. We go to Memorial Park, do the H. Lee Slavin volleyball tournament for fundraisers every year. We did all kinds of fun. We'd have 3-on-3 basketball tournaments. Church of Christ or somebody would let us, you know, do a tournament at their gym, at their church, and, you know, charge us a minimal fee, you know, because they always wanted to give us. And we said, no, traditionally wise, being a wise guy, we got to give you something for it. I remember when I first came to area and they told me the hospital that they were at, that's no longer, Hal talked about it in his interview, is no longer named that, turned into the women's hospital later, I believe. But anyway, they said, well, you got to give us something. Doesn't have to be money. Just give us a canned good, you know, give us a can of green beans or whatever. But people were so wide open to us that people wanted to come, if nothing but to see what was going on. What were we doing that was so special that that fire just sparked? And I'm fixing to interview the guy that started CA in Beaumont. I talked to him today and I navigated him through the website so he could listen to Hal's story and kind of get a gist of what we're going to be doing. And his name is Nick, and Nick is going to let me interview. He started Beaumont and he also started the Texas City Group. So yeah, and oh, I'm talking to the guy that was in on the beginnings of Galveston also. So, you know, it's almost like we're having a resurrection. You know, we're getting revitalized down here, and we're starting to attract more of the newer people that haven't done CA service work in certain areas to come and be a part of.
Excellent. Now I want you to think about this question. It's twofold. One is, what is the same about CA today as it was back in 1989 when you came in? And what is different today from what it was like back then? So what's the same and what's different?
Okay, I would say the same is in a Cocaine Anonymous meeting, the care and concern is there. And I'm not saying it's not there in other meetings, you know, because I still, there's an AA meeting downtown that I go to maybe twice a week or at least once a week. That's a very old meeting, and they have care and concern too. But I just see how the newcomers still respond like I did when he finally soaks in. Oh, these people, they're not messing around. They really do care about us, you know. And what's different is I think the different there's differences in generations. When you see different generations come through your fellowship and the expectations, I think we as people that have been around a long time have to guard, you know, our tendency to have expectations or even be judgmental of the new people that are coming in that may, you know, understand it differently, but they still want it, you know, and I don't want to miss the opportunity of introducing them to it because I don't think they value sponsorship like I did, or I don't think they, you know, want to go through the big book or whatever. But we have our directions, and it says it tells us exactly what to do. It doesn't leave anything out. Put your foot here, put your foot there. That's what I loved about Cocaine Anonymous, because I was never ever on my own. If it wasn't in a book, I could call somebody, I could go to a meeting and share and get all these other people's you know, experience, strength, and hope on whatever I was going through. So I think the care and concern stood out, and I think we need to be a little bit more understanding because there's different drugs out there that weren't out there then, and they're doing stuff that you know, it could kill you on your first hit. And if you're very blessed, if you got to use it twice. So, you know, that's brain damage out there too, as if our brains weren't already damaged by the way that we think as alcoholics and addicts. But I just think I'm learning to be more patient and tolerant and really use it even more than I had to when they were being patient and tolerant towards me. And that's what I look back on. I'm sure I look the same way maybe some of these newer people look to me. That's how I looked when I came back in. And I mean, I came, yeah, back in. So I try to remember that and practice my patience and tolerance because all my stuff starts up here and that's not always a good place to start.
I'm just going to close with one last question.
Okay.
How would you like to be remembered in CA?
I would like to be remembered as a woman that loved this fellowship and didn't have to have a position to work for this fellowship and be a clean and sober person that may not represent the fellowship, but I can show you how to live life on life terms no matter what.
Wonderful. You know, Veronica, I just really want to thank you for your time and your insight and such a well-articulated story. It's one of the best interviews I've heard. And on behalf of you know, the World Service Committee, Archive Committee, we're just really delighted to have captured your story. And it'll be something for the fellowship and the posterity of CA from here on in. So thank you.
Thank you, Cameron, for having me. I really appreciate it.